Now it's time for Toker Talk Radio, the voice of the marijuana nation.
What are you people? On dope?
Where you can toke.
I inhale. Frequently.
Or you can talk.
I experimented with marijuana and didn't inhale.
Or you can toke and talk.
10 federal criminal penalties for possession of up to 1 ounce of marijuana.
While we talk about toke on Toker Talk Radio.
So by the way, when it comes to pot, you know, if you're 40 years old, you live in a log cabin in Oregon, you got 12 giant pot plants in your backyard, have a ball.
Live from beautiful Portland, Oregon at Rolla J Studios.
Cannabis.
Plus your calls live at 971-533-7111.
They're walking on their pants with their cap on backwards, listening to the Enema Man and Snoopy Snoopy Poop Dog.
What's to keep somebody from getting all potted up on weed and then getting behind the wheel?
Gateway theory doesn't work. It's a reality.
Holland, is it real? Don't tease me.
We're locking up people that take a couple of puffs of marijuana, and the next thing you know, they got 10 years.
And now, here's your host, the guru of ganja graphics, the sultan of sativa statistics, and the worst nightmare of a reefer mad prohibitionist. A polite, perspicacious, productive pothead with a propensity for PowerPoint. Radical Russ Belville.
Thank you, thank you, thank you. Welcome to hour two of the Russ Belville Show. This is a little bit we call Toker Talk Radio, where we let what's left of my hair down and dig deeper into the marijuana stories of the day. We also take your live calls here, toll free at 844-420-RADIO. That's 844-207-2346. Or you can dial us direct at 971-533-7111. I want to start things off with a little bit of a smackdown from a couple congressmen against the Department of Justice.
Let's get ready to rumble!
We have a letter written today from Congressman Dana Rohrabacher and Congressman Sam Farr to Attorney General Eric Holder at the Department of Justice, and it reads thus. Dear Attorney General Holder, as you know, 35 states have made the production, sale, and use of at least some form of medical marijuana legal under their state's laws, notwithstanding federal law. This number includes 12 states that have enacted measures that permit the use of CBD oils that are illegal under federal law to treat seizure disorders. We write in response to recent statements indicating that the Department of Justice does not believe a spending restriction designed to protect these states' medical marijuana laws applies to specific ongoing cases against individuals and businesses engaged in medical marijuana activity, and that the department will proceed with ongoing litigation that undermines the laws of California and other states that permit medical marijuana. Specifically, in an LA Times article entitled, Justice Department Says It Can Still Prosecute Medical Marijuana Cases, a department spokesman, Patrick Rodenbusch, said that the amendment doesn't apply to cases against individuals or organizations, but merely stops the department from impeding the ability of states to carry out their medical marijuana laws. As the authors of the provision in question, we write to inform you that this interpretation of our amendment is emphatically wrong. Rest assured, the purpose of our amendment was to prevent the department from wasting its limited law enforcement resources on prosecutions and asset forfeiture actions against medical marijuana patients and providers, including businesses that operate legally under state law. In fact, a close look at the congressional record of the floor debate of this amendment clearly illustrates the intent of those who sponsored and supported this measure. Even those who argued against the amendment agreed with the proponent's interpretation of their amendment. Criminal prosecutions, like the recent Kettle Falls 5 case in Washington, as well as asset forfeiture actions, like those mentioned in the recent LA Times article against dispensaries in the San Francisco Bay Area, were what motivated us and a majority of our colleagues in the United States House of Representatives to approve this measure and ensure it was codified in the Consolidated and Continuing Appropriations Act late last year. In fact, we can imagine few more efficient and effective ways of impeding the ability of states to carry out their medical marijuana laws than prosecuting individuals and organizations acting in accordance with those laws. Further, to the extent that there may be questions about whether the facts of these matters or any other specific case constitute violations of state law, we suggest that state law enforcement agencies are best suited to investigate and determine free from federal interference. As you well know, state authorities handle the vast majority of enforcement of marijuana laws, and states are responsible for implementing and enforcing laws and regulations relating to medical marijuana. The states are therefore in a better position than the department to resolve these questions. In closing, we respectfully insist that you bring your department back into compliance with federal law by ceasing marijuana prosecutions and forfeiture actions against those acting in accordance with state medical marijuana laws. Sincerely, Representatives Dana Rohrabacher and Sam Farr. Fantastic, gentlemen. Thank you so much. Nice to have our elected officials standing up for us. And the next step, now I don't know exactly the mechanism, how this works, but Congress needs to start holding these guys in contempt. Subpoena Melinda Haig or whatever her name is. Subpoena these people that are moving forward on these prosecutions and let them know they're risking jail. They're disobeying Congress on this issue. There's no excuse for this to be going on any longer, Attorney General Holder. You can't turn a blind eye to it. Congress has acted. All of those times, well, we'd do something, but, you know, it's really up to the Congress. Well, the Congress made up its mind. They don't want you busting medical marijuana providers and patients any longer. Get with the program or go to jail.
America's RR7 secret agent of progressive change.
The name's Belville, Russ Belville.
This is the Russ Belville Show.
It'll be interesting to see if anyone's got the political will to actually lay down some subpoenas, some contempt charges, frog march some of these U.S. attorneys in front of some cameras. But it needs to happen. Two-thirds of the United States have laws that protect medical use of marijuana, and the Congress agrees with it. It's time for these renegade U.S. attorneys to be reined in. We're back with some Leonard Nimoy news right after this.
RR7, the activist radio station. Are you tired of storing your herb in back alley baggies? Then keep your herb fresh and protected with Pottles. Pottles are airtight and odor-free. Not to mention they're reusable, BPA-free, and UV-resistant. Pottles come in a variety of sizes, styles, and colors, so go check out Pottles at mypottles.com. Use the code STASH to get an additional 10% off. Again, that's mypottles.com, MYPOTTLES.com, and tell them Radical Russ sent ya.
Hey, this is Big Daddy. Big Daddy.
I like it like that.
I want you cats to join me at the Funky Roller Ring right here on 420 Radio. It's like the groove in Soul Town, smashed together with a greasy pork sandwich on the side, baby.
Two hot dogs and a strawberry soda.
Funky Roller Ring.
Support for 420 Radio comes from Kick-Ass Cannabis and Veggies, a guide to gardening with nature, authored by Kip Zonderkopf. based on the ethos that a living soil is the foundation of a thriving garden. Kick-Ass Cannabis and Veggies is your guide to naturally growing resinous buds and nutrient-rich veggies. Get the ebook now with instant download at kickassorganics.com. Previews available on Amazon, iTunes, Nook, Google Play, Kobo, and many other online retailers.
Welcome back, everyone. 4:10. 7:10 out on the East Coast. All my East Coast listeners getting their dabs on, I'm sure. That's music from Slightly Stupid with Top of the World. And as we move into this segment, I wanted to talk a little bit about Star Trek. You know, the real Star Trek, original series, not this next generation talky talk stuff. You know, real Star Trek, where they get into fights. Yeah, yeah, I grew up on Star Trek. And so I was saddened to hear the death of Leonard Nimoy. He passed away just this end of February, February 27th. Been gone for over a month now. And I just learned today why Leonard Nimoy passed away. He passed away from complications associated with COPD. That's chronic obstructive pulmonary disease. Last year, Leonard Nimoy used Twitter to announce that he had COPD, and he linked it to a past smoking habit. In January, he tweeted a caution that read, "Don't smoke. I did. Wish I never had." So it's sad that cigarette smoking took Leonard Nimoy, and the marijuana link to this that I wanted to bring up is how our opponents will say that marijuana smoking is bad for the lungs. It's all so bad. It's got the same bad stuff as cigarette smoking. And folks, it's not true. In fact, the biggest studies to ever have been done, large-scale studies on the health, long-term health, 30-year long-term studies on the health of smokers, non-smokers, and tokers, found that tokers had no greater risk of head, neck, or lung cancers or chronic obstructive pulmonary disease than did non-smokers, and in fact, had a bit less of an occurrence than non-smokers, and of course, far less than tobacco smokers. And I think of so many of my friends who have been tobacco smokers who have told me how marijuana smoking has helped them quit their tobacco habit. And so whenever I hear of someone like Leonard Nimoy, who was a lifelong tobacco smoker, I often wonder how many of those tobacco smokers might still be alive today if they'd have had the safer option to switch to. If they'd have had the opportunity to try to use marijuana as a way of getting off that toxic, toxic tobacco. And to think that we live in a society where tobacco, the bad drug, the one that we all think is awful now, this evil, terrible smoking that's banned almost everywhere, is still legal and tolerated. It's still a legal product for sale to adults over the age of 18 in many states. That's something that's pretty amazing to me. To think, and this is something that, you know, I'm working on an article on this, and it's this idea of how accepting Americans are and our culture is of drugs and the risks and the detriments that come with them. And yet are terrified in some respects, some places, some people are terrified of what legal marijuana might bring. You know, the other day I was like standing around, I think I was walking my dog somewhere, and I saw these guys that were standing on a stoop and smoking cigarettes. They were both smoking a cigarette. And they finished their cigarette and nonchalantly just dropped the cigarette on the ground and stepped on it and walked away. And I think to myself, if this were like, you know, imagine someone was smoking out of a meth pipe on the stoop and then just dropped the meth pipe and walked away, right? Just left the, or heroin syringes, left the heroin syringes right there in the streets. But we have this drug, cigarettes, that creates not only the secondhand smoke, and you know, the secondhand smoke's one thing. To me, though, the thing that bothers me the most about tobacco smokers is they don't think of a cigarette butt as garbage. Like, you know, somebody who would be very cautious, you know, they say they're drinking out of a fast food cup and would make sure that they throw that fast food cup away. They wouldn't just toss it on the street. They just wouldn't throw it in the gutter. Most of them, I assume. Some people are jerks, right? But most people, I think, wouldn't just toss garbage out on the street. But they'll do it with a cigarette butt. Without even, it's like such, it's not even a consideration. Like, when they're finished smoking, they flick it like it doesn't even exist. Like, they're flicking a booger. Like, it's just nothing. And I take public transit everywhere I go, right? So every bus stop I go to, there are cigarette butts all over the place. And every train platform I wait at, there's cigarette butts all around the tracks and all around the rocks and everything. Cigarette butts everywhere. And we accept this as a society. It's like acceptable. That's just the way it is. Nobody ever talks about, you know, the risk of cigarettes and the detriment they bring to us with respect to the litter. And, you know, there's got to be a certain number of brush fires that are started from people flicking those cigarettes out of windows and such. And yet nobody talks about making tobacco illegal because of that. We accept the fact that, hey, we're going to have a certain degree of freedom here. We're going to allow people to use cigarettes that cause this COPD, that cause this lung cancer, that cause this secondhand smoke that nobody likes. We're pretty accepting of that. But and we accept that, you know, that's a freedom and there's going to be a cost to it. And part of that cost, you know, there's going to be cigarette butts and garbage and fires and all that. We even accept with tobacco, we accept there's this drug. And it's like, if it wasn't tobacco, if it wasn't cigarettes, if it was a brand new drug and you tried to explain this to people, right? Like, imagine a world where there's this highly addictive drug and 20% of the population, one in five of the people, use this highly addictive drug. But And this highly addictive drug causes all sorts of damage to not only the person using the drug, but also the people around them while they're using the drug, and causes damage to the environment around you as far as garbage and all that is concerned. And we accept that people use this drug and we don't stop them from getting jobs. They're allowed to get jobs. They're allowed to work among us. They're allowed to go to school. Nothing about their use of this drug endangers their means of making a living, their means of getting an education, doesn't endanger their rights in any way. And we're so accepting of this drug, this highly addictive drug, deadly toxic drug that people are addicted to, that we actually make accommodations for them in the workplace. We do. We make some accommodations for them. For a lot of them, we will allow them a break every couple of hours that they can get up away from their work, being completely unproductive on paid company time, and we allow them to take these breaks to go get a fix. Some places will even build a shelter for these people outside so that they can get their fix. We accept that these drug addicts work among us, and we're so tolerant of their drug abuse that we actually allow them to use the drug at work. We accept the productivity drain that comes with that of up to an hour a day, if these guys are taking four cigarette breaks a day, 15 minutes apiece, we even accept that it's going to cost productivity in sick time that they take from the effects of this drug. We're all cool with that, but we can't accept marijuana being legal. For one, marijuana users aren't going to leave butts all over the place. We're pretty good about, you know, keeping our roaches and recycling. We've gotten into that habit. It's just amazing to me. Between that and alcohol, that we have another drug that we accept people use on a recreational basis that impairs their judgment, impairs their reaction times, and yet we build buildings with parking lots for them to bring their cars to park while they're using that drug. And then we just trust them to evaluate their own ability to get that car home. Amazing, isn't it? That's just something that's amazing to me, because I don't look at this as the differences between the drugs. I look at this as the differences in how we treat their users. If we can accept that alcohol users can manage their own party, why can't we trust that of marijuana users? If we can trust that tobacco users can still be productive workers, why don't we trust that for marijuana?
420 Radio, the home of marijuana experts. Hey everybody, it's Radical Russ here from 420 Radio, inviting you to be like me and get your ink done at Lucky Horseshoe Tattoo, Fort Worth's most female-friendly, clean, sterile, awesome tattoo shop. Thomas and his crew are true artists who can design you a custom piece or use a design you bring in. Lucky Horseshoe Tattoo also offers all styles of tattooing as well as piercings and all-around fun. In the DFW area, stop by Lucky Horseshoe Tattoo and tell them Radical Russ sent you. Trust me, it'll feel awesome.
The Fingerboard Extension has fretted instruments to enhance your creativity. It has new and used guitars and banjos from beginning to high class. The Fingerboard Extension has National Resophonic, Husson Dalton, Larrabee, Heritage and Recording King guitars, and Mike Ramsey, Wildwood, Gold Tone and Recording King banjos. The Fingerboard Extension also has drum stuff, used gear and parts. Stop by the Fingerboard Extension, downtown Corvallis, Oregon at 120 Northwest 2nd, or check out the inventory on the web at fingerboardextension.com and reverb.com.
Get .buzz. .buzz is the internet platform that fuels community interest, excitement, and new experiences. .buzz is the premier online destination for internet users seeking the latest news on a variety of topics. .buzz appeals to groups active in blogging, communications, journalism, advertising, and marketing. .buzz offers registrants a stronger alternative to the shrinking namespace of existing top-level domain names, such as .com, .net, and .org. Get your name now at get.buzz.
Everyone knows music and marijuana go together, so let's wind up our 20 after break with the Russ Belville Show's Daily Toker Tunes, the best in pod safe 420 music from around the web. Today is Irie Wednesday, featuring reggae, ska, and other world music genres. Now, sit back and enjoy your Daily Toker Tunes.
Welcome back, everyone. Almost 23 after the hour. And today for our Daily Toker Tunes, we give you some more world music from our friend Gordon Green at Gordon Green's Music Planet. You can catch Gordon Green's Music Planet every Wednesday night at 8 p.m. Pacific time. We got a new edition coming up tonight. Check it out. All sorts of interesting music, all sorts of different languages and cultures, and it's one of the best programs we've got on 420 Radio. I really enjoy it. Check it out. It's Gordon Green's Music Planet, 8 p.m. Pacific tonight. And you can catch it at 8 a.m. on Wednesdays as well, if you're on the other side of the planet and that's when you're awake. So, or you just happen to be a morning person. Maybe that's why. Unfortunately, Gordon Green can't join us today for our Toker tune, but we'll pull one up from the library. This is one of his favorites. It's Manu Chao from Brazil with Me Gustas Tu.
Que corazón, mi corazón. Te lo dije bien clarito.
Permanece a la escucha. Permanece a la escucha.
12 de la noche en La Habana, Cuba.
11 de la noche en San Salvador, El Salvador.
11 de la noche en Managua, Nicaragua.
Me gustan los aviones, me gustas tú. Me gusta viajar, me gustas tú. Me gusta la mañana, me gustas tú. Me gusta el viento, me gustas tú. Me gusta soñar, me gustas tú. Me gusta la mar, me gustas tú. ¿Qué voy a hacer? Je ne sais pas. ¿Qué voy a hacer? Je ne sais plus. ¿Qué voy a hacer? Je suis perdu.
¿Qué corazón, mi corazón?
Me gusta la moto, me gustas tú. gusta marihuana, me gustas tú. Me gusta colombiana, me gustas tú. Me gusta la montaña, me gustas tú. Me gusta la noche. ¿Qué voy a hacer? Je ne sais pas. ¿Qué voy a hacer? Je ne sais plus. ¿Qué voy a hacer? Je suis perdu. Cocina, me gustas
de la
tú.
Mañana.
Me gusta camelar, me gustas tú. Me gusta la guitarra, me gustas tú. Me gusta el reggae, me gustas tú. ¿Qué voy a hacer? Je ne sais pas. ¿Qué voy a hacer? Je ne sais plus. ¿Qué voy a hacer? Je suis perdu. ¿Qué corazón, mi corazón? Me gusta la canela, me gustas tú. Me gusta el fuego, me gustas tú. Me gusta menear, me gustas tú. Lasaña, me gustas tú. Me gusta la castaña, me gustas tú. Me gusta Guatemala, me gustas tú. ¿Qué voy a hacer? Je ne sais pas. ¿Qué voy a hacer? Je ne sais plus. ¿Qué voy a hacer? Je suis perdu.
Radio Reloj. 5 de la mañana.
420 Radio, fighting prohibition since 2012.
Are you in the market for portable vaporizers now? Get online to vapes.buzz, the quick and easy link to portablevaporizersnow.com. Vapes.buzz has everything you are looking for, including vape pens, herbal vaporizers, e-juice, parts, accessories, and more. Visit vapes.buzz and use promo code 420RADIO to get 10% off your online purchase, or just give them a call at 866-264-2415. Vapes.buzz. Get vaping, baby!
Growing plants indoors can be a rewarding hobby, but electricity bills can go through the roof. Then you have to cool down all those big hot lights. It can drive a grower insane. With Lush LED lighting, you can solve many of these issues and double your rewards. Matt and his scientists have developed the perfect light for flowering plants with far less cost and heat. And the results? Very effective. Check out LushLEDLighting.com right now and tell them Radical Russ sent you.
The law offices of Omar Figueroa would like to remind you to stand up for your rights. If you are detained or arrested, treat law enforcement with respect and stand up for your rights by repeating, "I respectfully invoke all of my legal and constitutional rights. I do not consent to any search and seizure. I want to remain silent, and I want to speak with my attorney." Please contact the law offices of Omar Figueroa at 415-489-0420 or 707-829-0215 or on the web at omarfigueroa.com.
Welcome back, everyone. Half past the hour, and that's music from Revolution, the acoustic version of Calling Me Out. Love that group. Good Irie Wednesday music. So for this next segment, I'm going to dig a little bit more into race and the drug war. And you might find me on a different side on this one than you might expect. I saw some tweets that inspired this today. THCNBC, at THCNBC, said, "Blacks got hit hardest under marijuana prohibition, but it's mainly white guys dominating the legal weed scene in Colorado." Another tweet said, "Blacks paid, whites are getting paid." And the third one, "The Unbearable Whiteness of the Marijuana Industry." And that's the title of an article by Angela Baca on Alternate that was released on March 31st. And, you know, full disclosure, Angela's a friend, a colleague. We see each other at the different events, and I really admire her writing. And to be fair, also, this isn't something I heard first from Angela. This is something that Michelle Alexander, the author of The New Jim Crow, has been pointing out a lot. And I got to take some exception to this. I got a little bit of a problem with this one. First of all, while the marijuana industry may be predominantly white, guess what the makeup of the people was who were volunteering their time and effort for years, decades, sacrificing their jobs, their reputation, and risking arrest to try to make it legal? Were mostly white guys. Okay? And this is a problem that we looked at, you know, when I worked for Normal up through 2009 through 2012, and I was with Normal Chapters before that. And every time we'd go to conferences and these different events, it was always the elephant in the room was, gee, we're all white. Why is it that black people and Latino people get busted the most, but the people trying to stop that from happening are all white? Now, there's some excuse. I can give you some reasons. I mean, if you're already being over-prosecuted for drugs, why would you want to put a target on your back and be a normal guy or an SSDP guy or a drug legalizer? I can understand why it happened. But this idea that it's a bad thing that the weed industry is predominantly white when it was predominantly white people who created the weed industry seems like a misplaced anger. Seems like a misplaced problem. Yeah, now, there is one aspect of this where I will accede to this point about racism in the marijuana industry. And that's the point where we look at the laws themselves. And a lot of these legalization laws or medical laws will have this clause in them that goes something to the effect of, if you've been busted for a certain class of drug felony, then you can't get in the business. You can't have a license, right? And the idea behind these is, well, we don't want the drug dealers to come in and, you know, cover their drug dealing by getting these licenses, which is always a stupid thing. It's like, don't you want the drug dealers to be legal? I didn't understand that reasoning. But what these laws do, if they say, you know, if you're excluded, if you have certain, you know, cultivation or trafficking or conspiracy felonies on your record, well, then since black people get busted for that more often and are more likely to get convicted, that in and of itself prevents them from getting into the industry, and that would lead to the industry being wider. So to that extent, yeah, I agree. To the extent that medical marijuana laws or recreational laws are keeping felons out, to that extent, I will agree there's a racism to it. But beyond that, I think it's looking for racism. It's, you know, like, to me, it's like, what's the alternative here? Well, now that marijuana is legal, we need to make a law that 50% of the people that own dispensaries have to be black. I mean, I don't want to see an affirmative action for our industry, right? I don't think that's a solution. And last I checked, rich black people are just as welcome to get into this industry as anyone else. It's already happening in Ohio. Oscar Robertson, Frosty Rucker, a couple of ex-pro athletes, African-American, putting big money into their Responsible Ohio thing to try to get it legalized. But of course, activists don't like that either. Oh, these rich guys are trying to... Yeah, but a couple of these rich guys are black, aren't they? Aren't you wanting more black involvement in the industry? Last I checked, Tyler Perry's money would spend just fine. Oprah Winfrey's money would spend just fine. Will Smith could invest in dispensary. But so far, the only African-American multimillionaires that we see getting involved are people like Snoop Dogg and Wiz Khalifa. Artists that have already staked their reputation on weed. So I've just got this problem of this trying to paint the marijuana industry as purposefully trying to be an old white boys network. When, by and large, the people I meet in the marijuana movement, marijuana industry, are the most tolerant, least racist, most accepting people I know. So to me, you know, I met at the last event, I think, can't remember which one it was, but the guy who was forming the Minority Dispensary Owners Association, something like that. I forget the Minority Cannabis Industry. I forget what it's called, but something to that effect. And great, I want to see more of that. And we have high profile people like Charlo Green up there in Alaska, African-American woman who's making her mark in that industry. There's plenty of room and there's plenty of acceptance for everyone to get involved in this. But there won't be if the cry that we hear all the time is, well, white guys got, you know, black guys went to prison and the white guys are getting rich. Well, come on in and get rich then. Other than those laws that say past felon growers can't get licenses, past felon sellers can't get licenses, I'll agree, that's racist. Let's get rid of that. Let's get rid of that. But that would be fair for also the white guys who'd been busted too that want to get into this industry. Also, I think about all sorts of people who may have made a lot of money dealing weed in the past, who blew a lot of that money on stuff, on fancy stuff, rather than saving it, bankrolling it, to the point where someday they might be able to invest in the legal industry. So I just worry about this evolving narrative that somehow marijuana legalization is racist, that somehow the commercial marijuana movement is racist, notwithstanding how racist America is just in general, right? Corporate America is in general, or capitalism is in general. But to try to ascribe to some special kind of racism, that, oh, the black guys did all the time and the white guys are getting rich, I don't think that's fair. I don't think it's right. I think we've got a situation now where this is the new growth market, and there's no reason why there can't be more minority-owned businesses in this market. Where those laws need to be changed, yes, let's get them changed. But generally speaking, we need to see more black business entrepreneurs, angel investors that want to get involved in this. And so far, there's still a little bit of a reticence in the African-American community to embrace marijuana legalization. It's only recently that the NAACP has gotten involved in this. And even so, they've done it as more a racial justice issue. They're still in that stage where most legalization was back in the 80s. Where back in the 80s, the whole mantra was, no, we're not pro-weed. We're not, no, we're not pro-drug. We just think prohibition's bad. That's where they're still at. That's where a lot of the minority community still is that, oh, no, we're not pro weed. No, we're anti-drug, but, you know, locking up black people disproportionately is bad. You can't have it both ways. You can't complain that there's not enough minority involvement in the marijuana industry and simultaneously not want to embrace the industry. So let's get some more positivity about this emerging legal marijuana market. Let's talk about the jobs it can create for bud tenders, for trimmers, for growers, for ancillary businesses, and that those jobs being created can go to people of all races and creeds and ethnicities. There's 16,000 new jobs in Colorado thanks to marijuana legalization. 16,000 new jobs. I'm sure that there's plenty of black people in those jobs too. If we can see, if we can find where there is some sort of pattern of biased hiring, then that needs to be addressed. But that's the same problem you'd have in any industry. You could have that at your local Subway sandwich shop. You could have a guy that disproportionately hires white people. That's just, again, some of that endemic racism of American culture. I don't believe that the marijuana industry is any more or less racist than any other industry at this point, and probably less racist, I would say. So instead of crying about the white guys dominating the industry, let's ask why the black guys aren't getting into the industry. Let's ask what's stopping them, because other than those laws against felons getting involved that might stop some people, I believe the application processes, the money it takes to get involved, all of these things are a pretty level playing field at this point. Let's not blow this up into something that makes it an unlevel playing field.
Sir, do you think there will or should come a time for us to discuss the possibility of legalization, regulation, and control of all drugs, thereby doing away with the violent criminal market as well as a major source of funding for international terrorism? Thank you so much for your time, Mr. President.
Well, I think this is a entirely legitimate topic for debate.
Name the time and place, Mr. President. Radical Russ has been prepping for this debate full-time since 2005. The Russ Belville Show.
Radio, your ticket to the Boston Freedom Rally.
You know Herb Thrasher from the Herb Thrasher Flower Hour. Now get ready for Herb Age Designs for the proud cannabis consumer. Herb Age Designs, lifestyle gear for the 420 friendly. Herb Age Designs, we've got frisbee golf discs and durable hemp gear. Herb Age Designs, we've got shot glasses, drinking glasses, coffee mugs, and beer cozies. Check us out on Facebook and online at herbagedesigns.com. And follow Herb Age and Herb Thrasher on Twitter.
Georgia.
Hi, this is Willie Nelson. Alcohol prohibition didn't work in the 1920s, and marijuana prohibition isn't working today. It's time we stopped arresting responsible marijuana smokers. It's the fair thing to do.
For more information, contact NORML, the National Organization for the Reform of Marijuana Laws. Call toll-free 888-67-NORML or visit their website at norml.org.
When you are starting up a medical cannabis business, you want a fired-up lawyer who understands the needs of cannabis consumers. The Law Office of Lauren Vasquez is your fired-up lawyer for the cannabis industry. Visit her website, fireduplawyer.com, or call 1-855-MMJ-LAWS for more information. That's 855-665-5297 for Lauren Vasquez, your fired-up lawyer, or email fireduplawyer@gmail.com.
Welcome back, everyone. That's music from 10-Foot Ganja Plant with Bush Rock. Got a bunch of potpourri here for the end segment. By the way, no live show tomorrow or Friday. I'll be driving by myself, it turns out, to Denver. Gonna stop in Boise tomorrow night, visit my folks. Maybe get to see my nephew, who I haven't seen in a while. He's, what, 3 now? Something like that. Then the next day, I'll be in Rock Springs, Wyoming. That's right, Friday night in Rock Springs, Wyoming. Anybody in the Rock Springs, Wyoming area, if you're looking for something to do, I'll be looking for something to do. And I'll be looking for a friend indeed, because I will be without.
That's right.
Absolutely clean driving on this trip. Not taking nobody with me or nothing with me, if you get my drift. So, I got friends in Boise, but Rock Springs? I don't think I got any friends in Rock Springs yet. Sure would like to make one. Real quick, I wanted to get to a few stories that are out there. Human Rights Watch is suing the DEA. You remember the story we brought to you about the Special Operations Division, Kneel Before Sod. The DEA's Special Operations Division, if you remember that story, this is where we learned through Edward Snowden and his leaks that the DEA was collecting metadata, bulk metadata, on international calls, including the phone numbers, date, time, and duration of each call. And the definition of international is pretty broad. I got to see Edward Snowden's interview with John Oliver the other day, and Snowden explained how, in this context, international call means a call that at one point was not in America. Well, you know how our cell systems work and our servers work, and especially how voice over IP works. I could be calling my wife in the same city. We could both be here in Portland, and it's possible my signal, if I'm using Skype, going through voice over IP on the internet, could be bouncing off of a server in London or Canada or who knows where. So don't think when they say international call, they meant like, oh, they're going to catch every time that I called Amsterdam. No, they're going to catch anything where that call or its data at any point left U.S. boundaries. So that's a much bigger net. So Human Rights Watch is joining in on lawsuits against the DEA and the Justice Department for this bulk records collection. Now, the DEA says that the program's not happening anymore. Justice Department spokesman Patrick Rodenbusch said, all of the information has been deleted. The agency is no longer collecting bulk telephony data from U.S. service providers. Yeah, right. But it's good. We get these lawsuits going. That's good to hear. So another story I wanted to bring up comes to us from a news station in Honolulu, Hawaii. They've got some results from their workplace drug testing. This was from Diagnostic Laboratory Services, who has discovered that from first quarter of 2014 to first quarter of 2015, use of synthetic urine has doubled. Use of synthetic urine. That is, these drug testing companies are catching people using synthetic urine twice as often as the year before. And this goes back to this whole drug testing regime that we have for our workplaces. And everybody knows that it's being cheated. Everybody is well aware that people are cheating drug tests on a regular basis. We all know about the Wizinator, the fake cock that you can wear, the dildo you can wear with a pack of synthetic urine or real urine from a clean friend, and that you can use that at your drug test. One of our chat people, chat room folks, was talking about how their military drug test, they have to see it from tip to, from the tip of your cock to the toilet or to the cup or whatever, right? Just to think that it's somebody's job to make sure they see the tip of your penis to ensure that you're not a druggie. And of course, women have the extra, shall we say, marsupial option of transporting clean urine to their drug tests. So we have a country where workers are regularly carrying around piss, either synthetic piss or real piss, in order to keep their jobs. this is just the most disgusting thing when you really stop to think about it. And we also know that the drug testing is disproportionately biased against those of us who use marijuana, since it stays in our system and is testable long enough. Marijuana use there in Hawaii, according to this story, showed up in workforce drug testing positives at 2.5%. That means one out of 40. Every 40 people they drug tested for work, they caught one person. Now, consider that in the state of Hawaii, let me see if I can pull up this chart here real quick. Just did this recently. Where'd you go? All right, so in the state of Hawaii, the annual marijuana use is 13.8% of the population. Almost 14% of the population in the state of Hawaii uses marijuana on an annual basis. That's one out of seven. One out of seven Hawaiians uses marijuana on an annual basis. And yet, they're only catching one out of 40 on workplace drug tests. Now, does that mean that the most of the Hawaiians aren't working? No. It means that the drug tests don't work. The monthly rate of marijuana use in Hawaii is 8.9%. So that's about one out of 11. One out of 11 Hawaiians smokes pot on a monthly basis. But the drug tests are only catching one out of 40. 9% of Hawaiians are smoking marijuana monthly. 2.5% of them are getting caught on the drug tests. So let me think. Quick math there tells me that you're catching one out of every four, one out of every three and a half. For every one you catch, at least three are getting away with it. What kind of testing for workplace safety would you accept if it could only catch 25% of the dangerous people out there? That's pretty... 25% success rate in catching the people that are using marijuana. Obviously, these tests don't work. All they are doing is catching the people who are unlucky enough to have failed the test and not doing anything to stop the people who really want to pass it. All it does is it costs us money and invades our privacy and violates our constitutional rights, if you ask me. Now, I know the excuse I get back from people on this. Russ, the Bill of Rights protects you from the government. This is a voluntary private thing you're doing. I've actually heard this argument, right? And I mean, legally it's true, right? Like, you have a right to free speech, which means the government can't censor your speech. That doesn't mean your boss can't, right? So within certain reason, right? So when it comes to these drug tests, they're not considered an unreasonable search and seizure to drug test everyone who applies for a job. Now, in the case of government jobs, it counts, because then that's the government trying to search and seize things. But in the case of private employers, the way that the law has broken down on this is that you, the worker, are engaging in a voluntary contract with the employer. And if that voluntary contract involves giving them a cup of your pee, then you are choosing to do that of your own free will. You don't have to give them a cup of your pee. You don't have to work for that employee. You can go work for another employer. Ah, but what if all the employers in your particular industry do drug tests? Well, I guess you have to work in a different industry then, don't you? And that sort of legal apartheid against us cannabis consumers is what forces us into the lower paying jobs and the lower rungs of the corporate ladder and impede us from reaching the highest levels within our career path. And then the opponents of marijuana tally up the average incomes of cannabis consumers and the average incomes of non-consumers and go, aha, see? People that smoke pot don't make as much money. Obviously, they're not as productive. No, people don't smoke pot don't make as much money because you put obstacles in their career path that have to do with the quality of their piss. It's a self-fulfilling prophecy. It'd be like the only jobs you'll hire, the only people that you'll hire for fast food are Swedish. That's the only job Swedish people can get is fast food. Then we compare the incomes of Swedish people to everyone else. We find, what do you know? Swedish people make a whole lot less money. Obviously, the Swedish are not very motivated. No, you did that. You created that situation. And that's the situation we're under as cannabis consumers. We have these legal hurdles, these academic hurdles, these criminal justice hurdles placed in our way. And then when we fail to achieve at the same levels, that's used against us as an excuse to keep the hurdles in our way. Well, see, marijuana smokers don't make as much money. They're obviously less productive. I know what we should do. Let's keep marijuana illegal and punish marijuana smokers so that they don't smoke pot so that they won't make lower incomes. Talk about a Gordian knot, man. This is it's a Mobius strip of logic there. And drug testing is just, I mean, it's just really disgusting. And the latest thing on this, got this from Safety and Health magazine. This was published today. This is the official magazine of the NSC Congress and Expo, National Safety Council, on trucking. And there's proposed legislation in the Senate, H.R. 1467 and Senate Bill 806, that would allow Department of Transportation to recognize hair samples as an alternative testing method. This Republican from Arkansas, the Republican representative from Arkansas, and Senators John Boozman, Republican of Arkansas, and Joe Manchin, Democrat of West Virginia, introduced that legislation in the Senate. Now, some trucking companies already are using hair testing. They said with J.B. Hunt Transport, which is based in Arkansas, when they did a drug testing program from 2006 to 2014, 110 applicants failed the urine test for drug use, but 3,845 applicants failed a hair test. Well, once again, here's a situation where that sounds good to, from their point of view. See, we kept all these druggies off the road. But when it comes to hair tests, they're even worse than the pee test. Hair tests can detect drug use back 90 days. That's even more discriminatory. And trust me on this one, if you're a bald trucker, they're going to shave your armpit hair for that test. They're going to shave your chest hair for that test. And if, God forbid, you're a bald woman, guess where they're going to get the hair? So yeah, it's pretty disgusting. And this reliance on testing our bodily fluids and bodily material for whether or not we've ever used drugs in the recent past does nothing to protect us from someone who's using drugs now. You do more of this hair testing, which again, the hair testing is a whole lot harder to beat, a whole lot harder to fake your way past. You're just going to find these industries losing lots of good employees that don't need to be fired. Let's start judging people by their work experience, by their abilities, by their resume, by their character. And let adults be adults on their off time. I tell you, that's my main goal here, is the ending of workplace drug testing. It's going to take marijuana legalization for that to happen, but that's my end goal, folks. Oh, wow. Time flies when you legalize. That's all the time we got for today and, for that matter, this week. I'll be off tomorrow and Friday driving across the Intermountain West, across two of the worst states to be a stoner. In both Idaho and Wyoming, it's illegal to be high. Until next time, folks, take care of each other, tokers. Hey, 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 hey.
This is the Russ Belville Show. The Russ Belville Show is blogging and podcasting daily at RadicalRuss.com. You take a seed, you plant it, you grow it, you dry it, you roll it, you smoke it. You take a seed, you plant it, you